Hi, I'm Will. Okay, maybe I'm not Will. But this is What's Leaving and What's Left, a podcast about divorce. Why What's Leaving and What's Left? Well, maybe you're leaving and maybe you're left. Which is to say, this is a show about divorce. It isn't a how-to guide. It definitely isn't a substitute for legal representation or therapy. Although we will plead with you, please look into both those things. It might be good to mention here that there's nothing here to be construed as legal or medical advice. What's Leaving and What's Left is real divorce stories of real people. The idea came to me when I realized how many men I knew were going through divorces that would never look for help as they deal with divorce, or that when help was offered, they would never accept it. And yet, when they found themselves in a divorce, they wanted to talk to me about it. Interestingly enough, but maybe not surprisingly, their stories, and maybe yours, have a lot in common with each other. And while I can't claim to be an expert on divorce, relationships, psychology, anything, I think finding familiarity and common ground in some of these stories might be soothing and somewhat therapeutic. And maybe, at the very least, we can provide a parasocial group for people having trouble finding, or people having trouble even beginning to look for, help. Hey, it's Will. This is What's Leaving and What's Left. I am joined by Felix, as he's chosen to be known. How are you, Felix?
I'm doing great. Just enjoying the beautiful weather here in undisclosed location.
We love it in undisclosed location. It's beautiful. Felix, almost said your name again, just so you all know. This is take three. We're getting used to the format still. But Felix is going to... You're divorced, Felix.
Correct. I'm fully divorced. Dobby is a free elf.
Okay, how long have you been divorced for?
So divorce finalized the end of 2019. Which is a good time to get your divorce finalized.
Boy, howdy. So,
Coming up on 5 years, yeah.
Okay.
Right, yeah. End of 2019.
And how long were you together?
Okay, let me do some quick math. I don't like doing math in public. So we got married in the summer of 2009, so divorced end of 2019.
Almost 10 years.
Yeah, so almost a decade, or a little over a decade.
Okay, how old were you when you got married?
I would have been 24.
Wow, that's pretty young. Would you say that's young?
At the time it didn't feel young.
It seems young to me, but I don't know. At the time it didn't feel young. Why didn't it feel young?
Yeah, and so this is kind of one of those, I guess, maybe cultural things, but I was in the military at the time. You know, stop me if you've heard this. One, guy marries the girl he was dating in high school. They get married too young. It doesn't go well.
So you were high school sweethearts. How long had you been together in total?
13 years.
And I'm sure you didn't change much during those 13 years. Like, not a lot happens between college, the military, marriage.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the formative years of your life, well, maybe not always formative for everybody, but definitely, you know, the 20s were a time where I definitely changed a lot as a person, and that I'm sure had absolutely no effect on my
on your relationship,
on the disintegration of my marriage.
Okay, so you listened to the first episode.
I listened to like half. I've still got the rest of it.
That's great. You know where I like to start this. In the middle.
Yes, in the middle.
So walk me through with, you know, making sure you're not bringing your ex's name into it. Give them an alias if you choose. What was the conversation?
Yeah, so the conversation, you know, it took place probably over a multi-month series of fights, and these were like a group of fights that I look back, this is a fight that we had like long before we got married. Hmm. And I guess we can get into that here in like in a little bit, but you know, constantly fighting, constantly just retreading the same old ground. And I just remember looking at her, and I had known for a while that I'd wanted to say this, but I just remember just being in that moment and knowing that like, this is the time to say it. And I'm just like, I want a divorce. Like, I can't do this with you anymore. Like, I've I've had this conversation with you so many times. I'm tired of retreading this ground. I'm tired of being stuck, being lost, being alone. And I think it was definitely coming from a very emotional spot at the time. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it was also just a very honest and in a way, as much as it hurt to say that, and, you know, even to look in her eyes as I said this, to know that I was hurting her very deeply, to also know that what I was doing was the right thing. And I think that's a lot of simultaneous feelings to have all at once.
So, number one, would you mind sharing maybe some of the details about, like, what this recurring argument was like, what it was about? Or if not, totally cool, just kind of curious if some people might find similar arguments in their relationships.
Sure. You know, it's funny because it's such a small thing to have an issue about, but sometimes little things become big things. You know, really, it was, she always wanted to just stay home, never go out, never do anything, never go be with people, never. That was just kind of the person she became, and that wasn't the person that I dated. Mm-hmm. You know, the person I dated was, you know, we used to go to concerts, we used to go to music festivals, we used to go, you know, out to bars, you know, take in nightlife, and or just go on hikes, like be active. We used to do all of this stuff. You know, we had friends. And then slowly over time, you know, she would just retreat into herself and, you know, probably dealing with some depression.
Yeah.
You know, she would get very self-conscious if she put on a few pounds. And I mean, she's never an overweight person or anything like that. It's just, you know, I think sometimes that psychology of people not looking like how they think they should look, or how like their inner view of themselves is out of alignment with their outer self.
Mm-hmm.
This is obviously me being, you know, full on psychoanalysis here. But the issue was, is that she never wanted to like go do things with me.
That,
so like,
that is objectively where you were at, whether or not it was related to weight or whatever.
Sure.
Yeah.
So she never wanted to like go do things with me, but then would resent me if I would go do those things.
Sure.
So then it was, well, I don't want to go out tonight and you're going to go out with all of your friends. So I'm going to sit here and I'm going to be passive aggressive and I'm going to be mad at you. I'm going to get upset when you come home. So eventually it got to the point where I, and again, doing the avoidant attachment style, would just sort of swallow that and just kind of acquiesce to whatever she wanted and, you know, feel maybe a little bit of resentment at the time, but that little resentment added up. And, you know, we had a big fight. Probably about 7 or 8 months, like before we had decided to get married, where I confronted her about this, she copped to it, she owned it, and then, you know, things got better, and then we got married, and I went on another deployment, and then came back, and it kind of was getting like that again, and I believe we ended up having another conversation after we moved. We moved overseas for a while because, again, you know, being in the military, I took an overseas assignment.
And she came with you.
Yep. Yeah, well, she came with me. Yeah.
That helps.
It did. And honestly, I think the funny thing was, is I think if we hadn't have done that, I think we probably would have gotten divorced a lot quicker because we loved where we lived overseas, and it was a total change of environment. So we both kind of had to change ourselves a little bit because of the environment. But that kind of stuff started happening again and again. That led to us having another conversation kind of toward the end of our time.
Similar argument?
Yeah, just, you know, we started really strong there. Like, we were going out every day. We were, you know, exploring a new country, new culture, doing all of this stuff. And then, you know, it quickly turned into a situation where, you know, we stopped doing all of this stuff. We stopped, you know, going out, you know, and we stopped traveling. Like, after probably about a year and a half over there, like, the trips really stopped ceasing. She didn't want to go on trips. She didn't want to go.
How long were you in overseas in total?
3 years. So it was like, it was about like half the time there. And suddenly this stopped. And, you know, when we had the conversation again, a lot of it was she was feeling stuck from a professional standpoint because she really wanted to go be a nurse. And when, you know, because, you know, being overseas, there weren't really options for her to, you know, get the nursing education, you know, get into nursing school.
It's not transferable back to the United States.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And so what, and I was trying to be as supportive a partner from my own perspective, and, you know, I'm sure she probably has a different perspective on this.
I'm glad you said that. I've got her on the line. Hey, can we switch up? No, I'm just...
And ladies and gentlemen, it's been fun talking to you today, but I gotta go.
Let's go to the tape. Anyway.
She's waiting in the parking lot with a baseball bat. No, it's actually funny. Like, we're actually... I wouldn't say we're friends, but we've had some really good conversations, sort of post-divorce.
Okay.
And stuff like that. But I guess kind of getting back to the conversation we had while we were overseas, she was feeling stuck in her career, and what I was trying to suggest to her is, well, if you're feeling stuck, you know, I've got about a year plus left here, and I obviously have to do that, but, like, you don't have to stay here. Like, if you're feeling stuck, like, you know, this would be hard. This is not an easy thing for a marriage, but I'm like, if you want to do this, like, if this career thing is what you want to do, like, go do it. Like, you can, you know, go either move back in with your parents, or, you know, I can move back, you know, into, like, the barracks and, you know, basically just send you money for, like, a little apartment or something like that, and you can get a start on this now, because, you know I'm not re-enlisting. Like, I'm done after this. You know, this is my twilight of my, you know, long 8-year military career.
Mm-hmm.
So
it is a long time to me. As somebody who's never been in the military, that's way too fucking long. Anyway.
Well, and it's funny is, if you, in the military, like, especially at that point in your life, like, I shipped out for basic when I was 19. The journey from 19 to 27, if you think about, like, in the course of your life.
Those are big years.
But it also passes in a blink of an eye.
Sure.
Like,
yeah,
that
also feels true from 42. That definitely seems like a blip.
Yeah. Yeah, so, I mean, I suggested that. She wanted nothing to do with that. And so, yeah, I mean, again, you know, I remember, I think she left probably a couple months before I did, because I had to do, like, all, like, the closeout stuff and, okay. and move out of our, because we had, like, an apartment on base. So I had to do, like, all, like, the move out and close out stuff. So I'm like, why don't you just, you know, go, it'd be easier, you know, that way when our stuff, because, like, you have to ship your stuff ahead of time, and anyone that's ever been through the military moving system understands the insanity of that process. And, you know, to all my fellow people that have lived through that, I'm sorry. And if you're,
relocation process.
Oh, dude, it's insane. So anyway, she left. And I just remember, like, just sitting there, like, in a barren, like, apartment, like, sitting on, like, an air mattress, you know, all of our stuff's packed, all of our stuff's moved, and I'm sitting there, I was playing World of Warcraft, actually, just because I need something to do.
Dork!
Yeah,
sorry,
yeah.
Sorry,
yeah,
something in my throat.
Well, you know, dorks around the world, just remember that, people. And just feeling very angry, because I'm, like, again, like, 3 years living in a new country as an expat, like, we missed out on so many opportunities just because she didn't want to do stuff. And again, this is sort of...
Can you be specific? Like,
yeah,
when
yeah.
you say so many opportunities, like, more of the travel?
Yeah, like go on trips together. And I'm not saying we didn't. We did, but there was so much more that we could have done.
And for and some even, reason, that died off after a year and a half.
Yeah, yeah. And I think it was, you know, once the newness...
Thing.
Well, once the newness, the, okay. the new environment had, like, once we kind of got settled, it's that kind of that couple's comfort, I think, where you kind of, and this is something that, you know, couples do, and I certainly played a major part in enabling this, because I really didn't want to engage for like, a long period of time. You know, I would wait until it was a big thing, right? Like, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, you're like, oh, this doesn't rise to the level of an argument or a discussion yet.
Yeah, so I'm just not going to say anything,
right.
Which is super healthy.
I mean, when you said resentment, it's the same argument over and over that would just kind of leave a little resentment because you'd give a little more than you wanted to and wouldn't feel reciprocated. I'm like, boy, That sounds familiar. And resentment is that thing that turns into divorce.
Absolutely.
I don't know a single word that better leads up to divorce than resentment. I don't know. That's my opinion. But anyway, sorry. That was not to cut you off. I'm just like, yeah, this is happening again. It goes away. It comes back. You bite your tongue. You're not openly communicative. She is passive aggressive. Let's say, I'm not trying to point fingers, but let's be honest. You're both the asshole. No, I'm just kidding. But there are things that you both are contributing. So if I was to overgeneralize, you were avoidant. You didn't want to engage in anything that might be conflict. It didn't rise to a level of argument. And she didn't want to either.
Yeah, that's...
It would be a little bit more pouty, stompy.
We definitely walked around each other a lot. You know, we didn't really engage, and you know, it's one of those things that I've kind of had to learn as I've gotten older, and you know, done some work on myself, is that, you know, argument, disagreement, these things are actually healthy. These are the ways that we as humans get things done. And it's not just, you know, in like romantic relationships, it's friends, it's work, and even sometimes you got to fight with yourself.
Mm-hmm. So you were angry sitting there by yourself that you missed out on a lot. You come back to the U.S. Mm-hmm. How much longer were you together before the conversation?
Yeah, so this is kind of another thing we can get into.
Let's do it.
So we'll talk about the last couple of months here. We'll just be very frank here. I fucked up. I had a close friend that I had an affair with.
Okay.
While it was kind of in that like 2 month span while she was gone. While I was still overseas.
Okay.
Yeah. And you know, it's such a weird thing to look back on, because I mean, I was like, if you ever like watch like a movie character just do something so hilariously stupid, and you're just like, what are you doing? How can you not see that is the dumbest thing you could possibly do right now? But when you are that character, you're like, this totally makes perfect sense to me.
Yeah, why wouldn't I do this dumb thing?
Yeah, why in the midst of having all of these, having this like resentment and conflict that I'm really not getting solved with my partner, you know, the best thing to do is sleep around.
Fuck around.
Yeah, it's the time-honored solution. So
if you were to, like, looking back on that, yeah, if you were to put a reason why that felt, I mean, look, there's the obvious reason. Sex feels good. But beyond that, like, what else do you think drove that behavior?
Yeah, I mean, so I think it was a combination of this person representing a lot of the things that my ex wasn't, because like she was somebody that like wanted to like go out and like go hike and was an exciting person. And you know, part of that's just the newness of any person, right? Anytime you've ever, I'm sure you've experienced this, but anytime you start like dating someone new and it goes well, that person, that's the most exciting person in the world to you.
Lights you up.
Yeah, and I mean, this is, I mean, I'd been with my ex, you know, since I was
17.
Yeah, right? 18. I think I was 18. Okay. I was 18 when we started dating, and you know, this was the first time I'd been with another person, like romantically or sexually. You know, both. There was definitely some romance and sex involved for both of us, and yeah, it was exciting. Man, it was exciting. I mean, sure. The rush was insane. But of course, you know, I had to leave, you know, from my overseas posting, come back, process out of the military. You know, I got a new job. Fairly.
You don't
quickly.
Have to be specific. I don't want to dox you.
Yeah, it's fine. I mean, yeah, I mean, I got a new job fairly quickly, so I was able to provide, you know, for me and my ex. And you know,
You were already exes by the time you got the new job.
No, I'm sorry. Yeah, this is...
Who at the time was your wife. Yeah, sorry, I'm just trying to get the timeline.
No, perfect. Yeah, so for what at the time was my wife.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we were living together, you know, I came back, and, you know, I think maybe it was... a couple months had gone by, and you know, I was in a very weird place, and so I figured the best thing to do is I needed to come clean to my wife. And so, you know, I came home from work one day. I sat down, and I mean, she knew right away that something was wrong. I mean, I probably looked like a man going to the gallows at that point.
Sure.
But I told her what happened. You know, I mean, I don't think she wanted the sordid details. You know, she just wanted, you know, more of a, you know, who and when, you know, is this the only one? Has this ever happened before? And so we had that conversation, and I think I ended up taking like the next day off of work, and, you know, we talked through it. And, you know, I told her straight up, like, I'm like, if you want to bail after this, like, I wouldn't blame you.
Mm-hmm.
But we ended up talking some more. And to be frank, it was a good conversation. And I'm not going to say that, you know, it was probably the frankest conversation I think we'd ever had. I mean, even the two kind of major, you know, fights, disagreements, you know, talking about kind of this like depressive state that she would fall into. This was maybe like the first like truly honest conversation I really felt us having.
What was her initial reaction to the news?
Yeah, so when I told her, I mean I think she didn't even say anything to me. I think she just got up and walked out. And at the time, her best friend and sister lived across the street from us in another apartment complex. So she just went over there, and she came back like several hours later. And, you know, I think her response was, you know, she felt that this was something that we could work on. Like, she wanted to work it out, essentially, was what she, talked to me about. But then that whole next day, we spent it,
hashing it out.
Yeah, hashing it out, you know, having these conversations, and, you know, again, kind of getting back to, you know, all the what I've kind of just dubbed the old argument that, you know, you
don't want to go out,
you just don't want to do anything. And it's certainly not like, you know, I'm not a nightclub guy or anything like that, but, you know, I do like to occasionally, you know, go to a bar or just go out to an event, you know, a little stand-up comedy.
You're a friendly guy.
Well, you know, I try to be, you know, kissing the homies, all that kind of stuff.
The boys are for kissing.
Exactly.
We all know
Everyone
this.
Everyone knows this. Yeah.
No.
It's not gay when it's the homies. Remember that, fellas. Yeah. So the, you know, it kind of felt like we limped on for a little bit after that. And then, you know, moving forward, I found myself getting back into that same like situation, where it was just a constant thing of like, you know, hey, do you want to go? Hey, there's a concert coming up, and this is a band that you love. Do you want to go? Because, you know, it's also a band that I love. Like, this is something we used to do this kind of stuff together when we were young. You know, we used to go to all these concerts, all these shows, and, you know, it was fun. And she wouldn't. And so I reached a point where I'm just like, and again, avoid an attachment style. And also hyper independence or whatever, hyper self-reliance. I'm like, okay, well, if that's the case, like, if you don't want to go to this, cool, I'm going to go.
Mm-hmm. And that was just the norm going forward.
It became the norm going forward.
It's like, I know you're not going to fucking go. I'm going to go.
It for me felt like I was missing out on these things that I wanted to do. You know, favorite band comes to town. You know, I'm a big music guy.
Sure.
I'm going to go.
Yeah.
Like, and, you know, I would always throw the lifeline. Do you want to go? No.
I don't mean to interrupt. You're on a roll. But when you guys first started dating in high school, was there any indication that she wasn't going to be the concert partner? It didn't feel like she was going along with these things just to be with you. It actually seemed like you had shared interests.
Yeah, I mean, that was probably our kind of first thing that got the two of us like connected. Is we loved some of the same music. She was a bit more of an emo scene girl, and I'm staunchly anti-emo. But there's a lot of bands.
Hey, and that's time. thanks so much to Felix.
I mean, There were a lot of bands that kind of played like emo bands that played with like more like metal bands and stuff like that. Because that's
so there was a you could go to the same show and find a band two.
We went to a lot of the same shows. Yeah, I mean, she was.
So it was not to get completely off track with the kinds of music you like. I was just wondering, like, because that's a different podcast.
Sure.
But the it's just to say like. This is something that came up later in the relationship. It was not an indication before y'all got married, before y'all moved and moved and so on. It was just... Sorry, 1 second. Screensaver. Come on, you piece of shit.
All right, right
editing. That's what it's there for. Anyway.
Correct.
So, but none of this came up. You didn't see any of this coming.
I mean, you know, it was, you know, the slow walk, you know, to that definitely started occurring once we moved in together. Because we moved in together after I got back from my first deployment. And, you know, I started kind of seeing the writing on the walls, but I certainly wasn't smart enough or emotionally intelligent enough at the time to have been able to see that. You know, because I was a couple years older than her. I turned 21 on my first deployment, so I would come back, and you know I could go to bars and I could drink, and she couldn't, and you know it wasn't one of those things where I was at the bar 4 or 5 nights a week, unlike now.
That happened later.
Yeah, that definitely happened later, but we'll get to that.
We won't share where I know you from.
Oh
anyway.
Yeah. So that definitely created some resentment in her, right? You know, mm-hmm. she would get mad, you know, that I could go out, you know, and go to bars and she couldn't. And but the thing was is that like once she could, you know, she would go out with me sometimes. But it was definitely a slow walk of her just kind of wanting to just sit at home and just not do anything. And again, it, you know, it's a weird thing to like think that like that's the thing that like destroys your relationship. But it's also one of those things when you have a partner that's constantly saying like, hey, this is what I need. Mm-hmm. This is something that's important to me. This is something I need in a partner.
And I'm not getting it.
Yeah. Yeah. I want you to do these things with me. I like, you know, and we'll kind of contrast this here in a sec, but, you know, I want you to come do these things with me because I like having you there. I like having you with me. And, you know, by the way, I'll go do things with you too. Like, this isn't just mm-hmm. you have to ride shotgun with me on all of my stuff. Like, yeah, do you want to go to, like a conference on something you're interested in? Do you want to see, like, a guest speaker? Do you want to do this? Do you want to do that? You know, all that kind of stuff. But, you know, kind of getting back to, you know, the true beginning of the end, you know, where I'm going to all these concerts and all these shows. Yeah, I mean, she wouldn't go, and, you know, she would come back and she would just kind of just be in a funk for a day. But for me, I just remember standing there, like being at a concert by myself and just how good that felt.
Hmm.
And I started realizing that like the times that she would come with me, she was just grumpy, just angry about it all the time. And it was just now I get to enjoy all these things that I love doing. And, you know, over time, it just turned into this thing where we were living two separate lives. You know, I would go swing by a bar, or swing by a brewery on the way home, you know, have a couple beers.
Because you didn't want to be at home.
Yeah, yeah, I didn't.
Why would I hang out there? That's where I feel bad.
Yeah, or I would do anything to just really avoid interacting with her because there was no point. There's no point in trying to drag somebody along and especially, you know, realizing and, you know, having talked with her post divorce,
mm-hmm.
you know, when she's, you know, kind of realized she certainly has a unique perspective on it, and it's one I don't agree with.
Oh. Can you share a little bit about how she feels?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I mean, I'm obviously going to be, you know, taking her words from my own memory, so I may not capture things perfectly.
Well, you're doing your best.
But yeah, you know, I mean, when we had a talk a couple years ago, probably three years ago, one of the things that she really said is she just felt like we just got married too young, and that we were just two different people from the get-go.
Huh.
And I thought that was interesting. And, you know, I certainly agree with part of that. We did get married young, you know, young military couple. Although it's funny that, you know, I say that I didn't feel that I was too young at the time. And part of the reason why is, like, the military. Like,
right.
I was
ages you rapidly.
Well, also, I mean, realistically, I mean, I was probably for, you know, first marriage in the military. I mean, I was pretty old.
That's
true.
24, yeah, a lot of people are 20, 19.
Yeah, I mean, statistically speaking, I probably should have been on my third marriage by then with, you know, six kids, two different baby mamas.
Okay,
I mean,
now you're putting up firefighter numbers. We can't touch the...
yeah. But, I mean, I did see a lot of people. Like, a lot of people that had been in relationships shorter than mine, like, had already gotten married and were probably already, you know, have already boarded the train to, like, to Divorceville.
Mm-hmm.
And so I, you know, being 24 at the time, felt like I was, like I'd kind of done it right because, you know, we'd waited, we didn't really rush to it, there was no, like, oh, you know, get married so we can get our housing allowance. Like, by that time, I was already a senior in a position in the military that I was getting paid my housing allowance, so there wasn't a huge financial incentive, because that is a common thing, is that people will get married young just so they can get that housing
that
allowance.
Sweet government cheese.
Hey, I'm telling you, people, BAH, that is a sweet check the first time you see it.
No, I mean, I have opinions on military marriage as the son of a divorced military family.
Sure.
You know, and I think, you ready? Ready for a hot take from a straight white guy?
Bring it, daddy.
Yeah. That's what podcasts are for. So,
yeah, he's a straight white guy with a podcast. People,
I think there's a freaking marriage bubble, much like a mortgage bubble. And when you flood a system with incentives, financial incentives, or even just the benefits that go medically, that's financial incentive. But also to share information and to see your partner. When you start incentivizing people, you're going to see more of it, and you're going to see more of it done irresponsibly, much like with mortgages, right?
Oh,
like,
yeah, absolutely.
So anyway, yeah, that's my hot take. I'll stop there.
I mean, you call it a hot take. I think that's a pretty accurate take. I think I think there's a lot of probably twice, thrice divorced, you know, E7s, E8s in the military that probably have the same type of talk with their, you know, they're privates, they're seamen, you know,
yeah,
whatever.
It's like, I can't say no to that government cheddar. It's too good. And also, I like getting married.
Right. Yeah, I mean,
I like companionship. You're alone a lot if you're on deployment, if you're on a boat.
Well, you're actually not alone. I mean, that's, it's actually funny, like,
romantically.
Again, you're not alone. Sorry. But you're... deployments are interesting, and it's probably a separate. I think we've invented like three other podcasts.
I know, but this is good. I want to fast forward a little bit. So, you get divorced.
Yep.
Is it a pretty amicable? Do you go to counseling? Do you mediate? Do you litigate?
Yeah. So when I initially, you know, broached the topic, and you know, it was one of those things like I kind of had to say it like, you know, three times for it to be true. Right, you know, it was
a Beetlejuice divorce.
It really was. It was like I had to like say it like multiple times, you know. But one of the things that she did ask is, she's like, if this is true, then she's like, I at least want us to try like marriage counseling.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, okay, well, like I don't know if I want to go to marriage counseling when I'm already telling you I want to leave.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, well, at least maybe it might be a good way to have somebody kind of help us, like, do like a root cause analysis.
Okay.
And
what
so,
do you think about that?
I know, just because I've listened to a bit of that other episode, I know you're a big advocate for therapy, and I actually am too. But I do not have a very good track record of like therapists. That's a much, much older story for me. I had a pretty big bad experience when I was a kid. Basically, a therapist broke pa- patient confidentiality.
Ooh.
So yeah, I got some trust issues. So I have a hard time with that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
and
no, that's traumatic. That's fucked up.
Yeah, and so with this one, and I don't even remember her name, and it's actually one of those things that was such a bad experience. I would actually out her if I could remember her name, because like people need to not go to this person.
Sure.
But basically, the one session we had, we paid for 1 hour session, and the entire time, this counselor, therapist, whatever, wanted us to basically talk about the fact that both of us were children of addicts, and that we needed.
Did that feel accurate?
I mean, I on my side of the family, absolutely. The addiction runs strong in my family. And there's a lot of issues, particularly from my mom. And again, Freud, somewhere Freud's chuckling in his grave. But I knew that was definitely a thing for me. And, you know, somewhere, you know, probably on my own therapy journey, which at some point I'm going to have to, man up and actually give it another shot again. Because I do believe in the power of therapy, and I've read a lot of books from therapists, so I know there's great therapists out there. I just, you know, bad experiences. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I just felt like these are probably issues that we probably as individuals need to address, but addiction is not the issue. Like, it would be one thing if I was coming in there and it's like, oh, yeah. So it's one of those things where if we were going in and, you know, they were saying, oh, Felix is such a raging alcoholic, then, you know, I could see that being an issue. If alcoholism, drug use was an issue for one or either of us, I would have understood that more as a primary focus of marriage counseling. But I don't even think I even got a chance to really talk about, like all the stuff that I'm talking about here, none of this really got to get brought up until maybe, like, the last 5 minutes. Instead, I was being directed that both of us needed to go to Al-Anon, which, if people don't know what Al-Anon is, it's like a support group for people that are like the
children.
Yeah, children, spouses, brothers, sisters, or have ever had their lives affected by adults. And I mean, I've looked into Al-Anon. From what I understand, it's a great organization, helps a lot of people. So if you're somebody that's dealing with that, definitely something worth looking into.
ACA. Adult Children of Alcoholics is another organization. Mm. Anyway, just throwing that out there as a resource.
So the that was that entire experience. Mm-hmm. and
that was just one visit.
Yeah.
And it was like, how did she feel about how it went?
I mean, I think she was very confused. I think she went in hoping that maybe the counselor was going to maybe like talk me off the ledge.
Sure.
But if anything, that just made me want to jump even faster. And I basically told her at the end of that, I'm like, no, absolutely not. Like, this was not at all constructive. And, you know, I straight up told her, I do actually like feel bad, like, because I know you wanted this to be more of a thing, but that was also hilariously unhelpful, like completely unhelpful. And I do remember, I think the counselor wanted me to agree to like 6 months of counseling.
That feels like a cash grab.
It does. But I do get that from their perspective that, you know, you kind of have to need people that want to help themselves, right?
Yeah, and I get that, but at the same time, I don't think I've ever worked with a therapist that says, you have to buy the bulk package right now, because I don't think that's a good headspace to put you in.
Sure.
You know, like, you shouldn't be going to therapy necessarily out of obligation, but because you're getting something out of it.
Right.
You know, and so it shouldn't be, regardless, you're on the hook for 6 months of meetings. I don't know, it just feels bad. Anyway, okay, it didn't work, right?
Yeah.
The one meeting, it happened, it didn't work, and then you start proceeding with paperwork, somebody serves somebody, or what?
Yeah, so at the time, you know, she was trying to get into nursing school, you know, we talked about I'm trying to remember here. There's a lot of booze between here and there.
Oh man,
yeah. See, the alcoholism came after the divorce, as God intended.
I was gonna ask. Well, let's skip to that, because you say that you and therapy don't get along, and so regardless of that, like, everybody has coping mechanisms.
Sure.
Healthy or unhealthy. And so I'm picturing you, like, getting really into camping and silent retreats and yoga and just, you know, maybe therapy's not the route, but you were really focused on your inner journey. Does that sound right? Does that sound...
I mean, that's... I would say maybe not the camping and yoga. Like, I've done yoga. I do occasionally try to do it just because I'm a very influential.
I was actually totally fucking...
Yeah, you're actually not as far off as you as you might think.
Look at me go.
but, I mean, getting into, like, the inner journey, at the time, I was definitely overweight, and I was really not happy with how I looked, and I decided, like, I'm gonna change something. And so I got really into, like fitness. Mm-hmm. I probably went from...
Healthy coping mechanism.
Yeah, yeah, actually, it became such a cool journey. Like, I think I lost, like, I mean, probably in the course of, like, a 5-6 month period, like, something like 25 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I mean, it also, you know, this was kind of like in the divorce process. So I'm definitely like I'm losing weight, and I think that definitely helped me a little bit sort of in the...
Meaning
in the,
I'm back on the prowl.
Yeah,
I better
yeah,
daddy,
daddy's back on the market. Watch out.
Jesus.
No, I mean, it wasn't something so vain as that, but it was,
mm-hmm.
I'd also recently gotten a motorcycle, mm-hmm. and that was a very freeing thing because, like, I could just hop on the bike and I could just disappear for like an hour or two.
Yeah.
And if you've never...
Somewhere on the cusp of healthy and unhealthy coping.
Well, it's healthy as long as you don't crash. That's
correct.
Crashing's the unhealthy part of motorcycling. Everything else is very healthy. it was... What I found was motorcycle riding for me became like an active form of meditation.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it was just... When you're riding a motorcycle, you can't do anything but ride the motorcycle.
True.
Right.
I mean, I was only fucking around once again, but I've read Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance. You ever read that?
I haven't, but it's actually on my list of books to read.
I'll let you borrow it.
Okay.
Anyway, yeah. Sorry, continue. So, motorcycle riding, fitness, yoga.
Yeah, fitness, yoga, you know, and, I mean, I make a lot of jokes about drinking, and there definitely was a point, kind of in the post-divorce period where I did get a little too, you know, heavy into drinking, and, you know, I remember it was one of those things. I was actually going into work, hungover.
Oh.
Like, 3-4 days a week.
Ooh.
Yeah, and I realized it was kind of taking a toll on me, and, like, I remember, like, I had, like, a big dog guy.
Real quick, how long after the divorce was finalized, or was this during the divorce proceedings that you were kind of getting hung over 3-4 times a week?
So this was, I mean, I think this was around the time we'd submitted all the paperwork, because we did our paperwork together. Like, we, both of us were just like...
You're on board at that point.
Yeah, we divided assets when we separated, and we're just like, here's everything you're going to have, here's everything I'm going to have. I took the dog, and, you know, she moved into her place, I moved into mine, and then, you know, it was just kind of like, okay, I'm in this new neighborhood now, I don't know anyone, and, you know, kind of one of the big things that I lost during the time that I was with her was because I was constantly bailing on plans that I would make with people to appease her. You know, a lot of my friends just stopped calling. So I either lost friendships or missed out on what could have been new friendships. So, like, by the time I split with her, I didn't really have any friends. Like, I moved to this apartment in the middle of undisclosed location. sorry,
you're doing good with
that. I like saying that. But into the middle of the city, and I didn't know anyone. So, in that time, I've had to build a network of friends, and this is, I think, when we can talk about, like, healthy male friendships.
Mm-hmm.
Like, as a guy, if you don't have, like, some healthy male friendships, like, I think that is actually one of the biggest contributors to people divorcing, is mm-hmm. not having healthy male friendships to kind of...
As a man?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think everybody can benefit. Like, I think men can also benefit from, like, healthy female friendships as well.
Sure.
Right? Being a balanced person, getting different perspectives and stuff like that. But, you know, I think, you know, as men, and we tend to just we'll get our partner, you know, and then well, that's it, right? Mm-hmm. But you know, you gotta have your friends, and it's not just, you know, oh, you know, the boys, the homies, the guys you get drunk with. It's like when you have a bad day, like sometimes you just need to like go talk with a friend.
Totally,
blow off some steam.
Especially, so one of the reasons I ask, like, about the time that you were struggling with drinking, you know, I want to throw this stat out there. DUIs go up 30% amongst divorce people or people going through divorce. I feel like that's, you know, you didn't hit any of those.
No, I didn't hit any of those. And I think part of that, what helped was the place that I was primarily drinking was very close to home. That
helps.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're walkable. Walkable drinking
home. Yeah. So if it's a place that I can walk to and walk from, I'm not, you know, I'm also not blowing a bunch of money on like Lyft and Ubers and stuff like that. So that helped. But I just remember hitting a point where I knew I had been, I was not living right. Mm. And I decided to change something. It was like a new month. It was about to just take over like a new month. So I'm like, this whole next month, I'm not drinking. Mm. So I didn't touch a single drop of booze. And I got back on it. Honestly, one of the best things I found for weight loss and just also mental health is walking. Not drinking, obviously, but walking as well. Like, I would walk like 5, 6, 7.
To the bar,
7.
From the bar.
I'd walk like 5, 6, 7 miles a day. I'd listen to music, audiobooks. And
which also sounds like the motorcycle riding. It's just a meditative outdoor space to kind of clear your thoughts.
Yeah, and then and it was like, and I remember like that summer, I bought a I spent a bunch of money, but I bought a whole big like garage gym setup and started working out. That ended up being like, as much as people made fun of me for spending all that money on a garage gym, that ended up being the summer of 2019 that I bought that garage gym.
Oh man! If ever there was a time to have a home gym.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, but then I started really getting into like weightlifting, and I mean, you know, I'm definitely like in my own kind of health place. I've definitely put on a little bit more like body fat, but I'm also like, I'm a way bigger person, mm-hmm. like from like just like a muscle and strength.
And that's just gonna happen as we age.
Yeah, but it's also, it's just like I look back at like some of those old photos of me when I was married, and I'm just like, man, I've come like such a long way. Mm-hmm. And it's in a weird way, I mean, for all of my mistakes that I made, you know, in my marriage, like in some ways, I almost feel like I wouldn't change any of those, because what I learned in that was invaluable, both just about myself and just about the world. And I think sometimes that's maybe the hardest part about divorce is that we fail in a relationship, but we learn so much on the other end of it.
Mm-hmm. So I know you're dating.
Correct.
You are in a relationship. What, you know, and you've been dating, you've had other serious relationships. What are you cognizant of going into these new relationships to not do that again?
Yeah.
Right? I mean, obviously, not being 17, 18, that's a big, that helps. knowing who you are as a real adult human, that's good. What else? Like, what do you know you need to bring to prevent these things or to look out for?
Yeah, so I think one of the biggest things for me is, you know, I think I mentioned it a few times, is knowing now and being able to put like words to it that I have an avoidant attachment style. Mm-hmm. That when, you know, things happen that I don't like, I kind of have like an inward reaction of just like, well, I'm just going to like avoid conflict. I'm just going to hold this in. And knowing that, you know, sometimes we have to have those fights and sometimes be uncomfortable, and you know, it's but also being able to like being wise enough to know that that's a thing that I have, and being honest with my partner, like, hey, like, this is a thing that I have, like, you know, and not obviously putting the sole responsibility on them, but like letting them know, like, you know, hey, if you ever see this, Like, smack me.
Right, right. Call me on this.
Yeah, yeah. This is something you should absolutely call me out on. Like, I obviously shouldn't be putting you in that situation, but I think being able to voice those kind of things with your partner, to, like, let them know, like, hey, this is my bullshit. Like, this is hashtag mm-hmm. Felix on his bullshit.
Yeah, yeah.
This is what that looks like. And I think being able to do that and, like, being honest with yourself but also honest with your partner, that's been a big thing for me. So, yeah, I would say that's probably been one of the biggest things is not leaning into my avoidant attachment style, but also being able to call it by its name.
Sure.
Right.
Because being aware, like, when it's coming out of you, like, okay, yeah. I recognize what this is. Something happened that made me tap into this part of me.
Sure.
And, yeah, and just recognizing what moments trigger that avoidance, you know, like, what's the sensation in your body? I don't know. I do also have a avoidant attachment style. And my partner is anxious, right? And so that feeds it can get ugly if you don't keep your eyes on it, and if you don't keep the lines of communication open constantly to just be like, I don't want to say anything more right now, and I'm not sure why. Can you give me a second to figure out why this feels so scary and bad to address? That's what I have to do. So I, as somebody who's in that spot, I know my mechanisms to kind of get around just silence and well, fuck you. You know, that right. kind of like, I gotta do me. I don't know why you're mad right now. I don't know what just being able to be a little bit more like, let me share with you why I seem like this. Anyway, mm-hmm. that's my shit. So dating it's found you well. Do you carry any lingering feelings about the divorce? Is there like guilt, shame? Was there any? And yeah, just how were you then? How does it feel now to be a divorced person?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, talking about like lingering shame. I mean, obviously, I've always definitely the affair, like that whole thing, like there was definitely a lot of confusion and confusion, but maybe like just kind of being like lost and like, why the fuck was I this fucking stupid? Like mm-hmm. and so a lot like from that, I would say that was probably my biggest failure mm-hmm. as a husband was in that moment, not just the act itself, but also like getting to that point mm-hmm. where like I would run to another person for support, for comfort and all this. And I think that's always been, you know, if I can point to my single greatest failure, it's that. And probably secondly, followed very closely by that, would just be not engaging and like fighting with my partner enough. But fighting for me and fighting for my space, because
what I care about.
Well, because I think it's easy to like let the self disappear into the relationship. Like something that I found myself
codependency.
Something I found myself saying a lot when I've kind of tried to like talk to other people is that I think there's three parts to every relationship. There's I, there's you, and there's we. Right.
Yeah. No. I've heard it as the relationship is comprised of three people: you, the other person, and the relationship.
Yep.
Yeah.
100%. Yeah. Yeah.
Same idea.
Yeah. I'm sure it's probably been written and talked about in mm-hmm. far more eloquent terms than my own. But if you can't lose your individual self in the relationship, mm-hmm. but the relationship has to have its own space for it to be the relationship. Like the time you guys. The things you guys do together, the time you spend together, whether it's something major or if it's just something as minor as sitting on the couch watching a movie. Mm-hmm. Those are all parts of the relationship. But people also need their own space. And what I'd realized is that I lost myself in that relationship. And I'm sure she probably did too. Mm-hmm. We were just the relationship. We were only the we. There was no her. There was no me. It was just, it was just that us.
And you can check me on this if this doesn't resonate. I feel like our parents' generation did a lot to train us for, you know, your your occupation, your personality, your identity is this is the marriage. You know, sure. You are a husband, you are a father, and that's you now. You know, without really allowing you more independence, more of a sense of self. Because I think about my parents, and it very much seemed like I'm a mom now. Now what? I'm a husband now. Now what?
Right.
You know, and it's like there is no now what. That's the end of it. This is you did it. Wear your laurels and yeah, give up on any personal goals or achievements beyond this because this is you now. I don't know. That's my take. I think we learned lessons from the previous generation that can make us codependent.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's...
Does it sound like your parents at all?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely, growing up, I would see my, you know, what would be my stepdad would, like, sometimes get home too late because, you know, he was, you know, maybe having a beer with the guys afterwards and just seeing my mom lose her ever-loving mind because he dared to be home 10 minutes late because he decided to have a beer and stuff like that. And I mean,
he was late for his other job.
Yeah, he was late for his other job, which was
being a husband, father, etc.
Sure. And the irony of that is that, like, I mean, by the end, like, she would lose her mind on him for not being present, but she was the one spending all of her time locked in a bedroom. You know, I thought it was just that, you know, my mom was always tired all the time. It turns out my mom was just drinking too much and doing and abusing drugs. That was those were like later in life things that I discovered. And yeah, I mean, that's
tough.
God, that's that. Jesus, that's a whole fucking journey to go through.
And it's unfair. It's not that I'm blaming our parents for these things. Their society conditioned them this way as well.
Sure. Yeah.
And I think we're just in a better place about therapy, in a better place about relationships, to understand this whole idea that you can't lose yourself, that you need to be true to yourself, and that being in a relationship helps you grow yourself. So losing yourself in the relationship doesn't help the relationship.
No, not at all.
You know, the relationship is the ultimate mirror way of just recognizing where you need to grow, how you need to get stronger. Anyway, I think you nailed it. Any closing thoughts for people who are in a marriage that feels like it might be in a similar place, or any other people going through a divorce?
I mean, I always think that regardless of whether, you know, because I know you kind of focus this on both just, you know, those that have, you know, left and those that
are being left.
I always think, you know, no matter where you're at in that balance, always start by choosing yourself first. Like, focusing on yourself, if it's rebuilding your internal self, do that journey, go on that fucking journey, because holy shit, I could not have imagined, like, where my life would have led me in the post-divorce, you know, era. You know, there was a point when I was definitely kind of in my depressive state that, you know, I was divorced, you know, and dating for me at the time was not going well, which was just a result of not having, you know, done really
a lot of experience dating
or just having done any work on myself.
Oh,
right?
Sure.
I was trying to date as the old me and not find out who the new me is. Mm. Right. So yeah, go on that journey. It's hard. It sucks some days, but when you get to the point where you can love just being by yourself, doing the things that you want to do, building those healthy friendships, taking care of your body, taking care of your mind, do all of that, and holy shit, you will not fucking believe where your life ends up.
I want to second. I like the idea of being okay by yourself. I think that is a real green light for whether somebody's in a good place. If you're not okay by yourself, spend more time with yourself. You know, I think if you're not okay with people, you need to go be with people. If you're not okay by yourself, you need to be by yourself. You need to kind of, become okay with who you are in all these situations. So I like that in particular. Felix, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
I am Will. This is What's Leaving and What's Left. So from Felix and I, have a wonderful day.